Welcome, welcome to Paradigm Shifters. Paradigm Shifters are actually interviews with people who are making a difference on the planet. And as a lot of you know, I'm an intuitive, an energy counselor, but I have a wonderful, wonderful interviewee named Ruth Anderson, who is also an intuitive, and she has some beautiful, very, very inspiring approaches to her intuitive work, one of which is she works with souls in what she calls, it's etheric, but she calls it the Open Clinic. And her current book is called One Love. Welcome to the show, Ruth Anderson.
Thank you, Veronica. Pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to speak with you. This is very delightful. So I'll ask you the simplest question. So how did you become an intuitive?
You know, apparently it was a lifelong sort of process that I didn't know I was undergoing. but as I was growing up, I would have, you know, an intuitive experience here and there and didn't really think that much about it. But in retrospect, whenever I could find somebody who understood what I was talking about or had experienced that kind of intuitive hit, I absolutely gravitated toward them and wanted to hear their stories. And I think it just validated what I had been through. And of course, that's all in hindsight. I didn't realize how important it was to me. But my best friend, Sylvia, she and I taught together in California. And then I moved back to Colorado and missed her horribly. So we would get together when we could. And one of the things that we enjoyed doing was preparing Thanksgiving dinner together here in Colorado for about 28 or 30 of our closest friends and family.
Oh, wow, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm. It was a lot. So she was my sous chef, and it was perfect. Sylvia was 26 years older than I was, but we had this interesting mother-daughter, amazing friendship going on. And about 4 or 5 years ago, he called and said he couldn't come join me for Thanksgiving. Her brother was dying of cancer in Hawaii, so she needed to be closer to home so she could go see him, which of course crushed me, but I totally understood. And Thanksgiving morning, I woke up having had a horrible, very real dream that Sylvia's sister-in-law called me telling me that Sylvia was fatally ill in the hospital. I just could not shake that sickening feeling all Thanksgiving Day, and I tried to call Sylvia several times.
What was wrong with her? Did she also have cancer?
Well, nothing was wrong with her at the time. I thought she was fine. She thought she was fine. But I kept trying to call her on Thanksgiving and couldn't reach her. And the next morning, and this is in real life, next morning, her sister-in-law called me and said that Sylvia had a fatal stroke, had a stroke at the Thanksgiving table. So I flew out to California to be with her, and she was incapacitated. She was paralyzed on, you know, half of her body. And I kept getting these intuitive premonitions about what was wrong with her before it happened. And it ended up that she passed away of stomach cancer 4 months later.
Oh, how interesting.
Yes. So I was very curious. Why was I getting, you know, these dreams, these premonitions about what was happening with her prior to them happening? So after her death, I sought out some psychic healers to help me understand what I had been through.
And by that time, you were a full-blown psychic yourself, right?
No.
Oh, you weren't. Oh. And was she?
No.
Oh, okay.
that's what was strange about it, was we had this odd spiritual connection, but neither of us had intuitive abilities.
That you knew about.
That I knew about.
Right.
So I met with 4 different teachers trying to understand what was going on, and each one of them told me I really needed to go take classes and learn more about being intuitive. So I did. Well, here I am, you know, 3 years later, and I took classes religiously throughout that time and have developed my own intuitive abilities such that I now am, like you, an intuitive who works with clients. So I do work with clients, but I think more interesting to my story is as I was learning, I would spend a lot of time in meditation. During meditation, I met the Divine Mother and three of the archangels, and I was shown this place in the ethereal realm that was completely open. It had no walls, and I knew there was going to be immense healing taking place there. And I was told the name Open Clinic, which I guess made sense because souls could come and go. It was totally open. It was open 24/7, and they would show up and receive healing from my guides, or, you know, the Divine Mother and the archangels.
So this is the other souls that were already on the other side that received
some
the
of
healing.
Them were. Some of them were, and some of them are still here on Earth. So I learned how to recognize who had been in a body and had passed over versus who was still in a body.
Okay, so you're saying that the ones who came to the Open Clinic for healing could have been still on the planet, but their etheric nature came. Is that
That's
what
right.
you're saying? Yeah, okay.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had one experience with that where my husband was in a coma and we didn't know if he was going to live or die. And every time I went in to see, he'd say, I haven't decided yet. But what happened when I was driving home from the hospital is he came to the car and told me he was going to be living. And we had a big argument about why. And then I went back to the hospital the next day and he had come out of his coma, magically speaking.
Wow.
And I got it.
Right.
So not to take from your story, but I'm just corroborating that experience is really outrageous.
Right. So the whole idea in the book is about this place in the ethereal realm where healing takes place through the divinity for souls with and without bodies.
I love that. I love that. Now, you have a whole lot of, I want to say this, question this, that when you're going into the Open Clinic and when you're actually working on someone, do you ever find that that you can get in the way of healing somebody you know or having expectations of what you know, or do you actually surrender entirely to beings on the other side, and are you capable of doing that?
I do surrender completely. I absolutely do, because I know that any healing they can provide is going to be far superior to any that I could provide. But let me also say, when I'm in Open Clinic in the ethereal realm, I can see and feel God's white, pure healing light coming down through my crown, and it comes down my body and out through my hands. So not only am I getting to witness the other divinity doing the healing, but I also am involved in it. And my position is really more of holding space for what's going on there rather than actually doing healing.
But yeah, you are quite an accomplished, but you're also an accomplished healer. And perhaps the thing is defining that term, healer, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I still continue to learn what that phrase means.
Yeah, isn't it fascinating? Good for you, yeah?
Yeah.
And you've taken a lot of courses on how to do healing, but...
I have, but what I've really experienced, I think my major growth has been in meditation, working directly with the divine.
Okay.
Because my teachers don't understand what I do. I mean, it's not that they don't understand it, but they don't experience it themselves, so they certainly couldn't be teaching it to me. This has been a sort of a private tutelage, if you will, from the divine.
So when you're saying in meditation, so your meditation is contacting that source energy, is that right?
That's right.
And how long did it take you to learn to do that?
I had no intention of learning to do that, none at all. I took a two-year class that at the end of it, you become a reverend of the Church of Inner Light. And it was during that two-year stint that I would just go into meditation every day, and I was just being taught one lesson after another. And I wrote them down because I couldn't keep it straight in my head. It was just too much. And if I didn't write it down, it was sort of gone.
So that you were taught from divine light, one after the other, techniques. Is that right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And Gabrielle, Archangel Gabrielle, really taught me that I have to write these things down.
Okay.
Yes. So it really was during that 2-year process that all of this was being rolled out for me. And it was very frustrating at times that I couldn't just get the whole big picture of where this was going. And now in hindsight, I understand why, because I never could have understood it. It's just mind-boggling, really. But they keep teaching me things. Even today, I'm learning new things. So I keep writing them down, and I think much of the learnings after this first book are going into a second book that I'm going to be calling something like Walking with Spirit, or, you know, Living with Spirit, because really that's what this whole journey has been.
Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about all these different techniques and so on, where's my question going? I would like you to speak of kind of the different levels of working with people. For example, you've got a person here, and all of us have many, many levels of existence. Where do your healing forces come in? Where does spirit come in? Do you work into the physical at all? Do you work into the mental? Do you work into the vibrational? What is it?
I think it's actually kind of all, actually. So when I work just one-on-one with a client, because I've done larger groups as well, and creating an open clinic sort of concept where folks can come in and we'll meditate and my divinity are in the room and they actually provide healing for folks in a group. So that's a little bit different. But when I'm working just one-on-one with someone, I will, you know, we'll sit together and I will read them, such as, you know, an intuitive would read someone. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I've got the divinity here with me in the room, and either they're suggesting things or I'm actively watching them heal. So it's a combination. It's sometimes it's more of a physical issue. Sometimes it's an emotional issue. Occasionally it's a mental health issue. We look at past lives, spiritual healing. It's just kind of all encompassing. I don't think it's ever every single thing that a person is needing to heal, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they'll only take on like a couple of topics at a time because it would just be overwhelming.
One of the things I'm really interested in your work, which is that book is very wonderful, One Love.
Thank you.
But we have so many, as I was saying, so many aspects to our lives, one of which is, as you mentioned, past lives. And also higher self and higher purpose, right?
Right.
Do you think healing has to do with integrating all of that?
I think that's the goal. I think that's the ideal, certainly. But sometimes if somebody is just, you know, so upset about a relationship that they're in, you know, it's hard for them to look at the bigger picture of getting integrated with their higher self. But I do think that that's the overarching goal.
But also, if somebody's having relationship problems, do you usually go into other lives to see where they might have some things left over? You know what I mean?
Frequently. Mm-hmm. Yes, frequently.
So can you talk about that?
That's
a really interesting subject, I think.
Well, it is. So I had a very interesting one the other day. I was working with a client, a gentleman who's in his late 30s. He's got a 7-year-old daughter, and he asked about his relationship with her. So I pulled up past life that they were in, but in that relationship, they were husband and wife, and they had such an intense passion in that past life that I was told to guard or to warn him about keeping his boundaries in this life.
How interesting.
With her.
How interesting.
Yes, I was shocked, actually. But a real reminder to him that the cellular memory he has of that passionate love sexual relationship with his wife cannot enter into his relationship with this 7-year-old in this lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Now that's really interesting. That's really interesting because some years back, and I think it was right on the front of Time magazine, there was a teacher who was having an affair with her 6th grade student. And I took a look at that picture on the Time magazine and I went, oh my gosh, that is a past life passionate marriage. And I thought, how interesting in this society where it's totally inappropriate and it was a huge scandal and she went to jail and all that. But
yes, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, and I was, I'm sure you do, and I was so, probably I was naive in the sense that was my first experience of having that just shockingly pour through me, and it might be something for us to all be looking at, that rapport between fathers and daughters or mothers and sons or whatever, right?
Right, and I have used this information with the teenage daughters. And they will come to me and say, how come I can't stand so-and-so? And so I'll look and see if there's a past life with that person. Mm-hmm. And in one of the situations, there was. And I saw them on the battlefield. It was like Japan or Korea, one of those, going at each other with bayonets. And it was like, okay, I get it. I understand why you have a visceral reaction to this person who's a teenage girl in your school right now.
And was one of them killed in that life?
Yes, the other girl. Mm-hmm. And so she's coming back at my daughter in this lifetime with a vengeance.
Wow, isn't that interesting, yeah. Huh?
It is, but it helped her kind of understand that this detention from this girl really isn't out of left field.
Well, let's tell our listeners what happens if you help her understand. What happens then? Does it become easier for both people? Does the other person drop the defense, or what happens?
You know, I helped her look at that energy and acknowledge it and apologize in spirit, you know, just acknowledge her in spirit of, I understand what's happening between us. I have no ill will towards you. And it actually helped ease things up. So now they are very comfortable just ignoring each other, whereas before it was like viciously coming at her.
That's really interesting, isn't it?
I thought it was fascinating.
So let's talk of more of this kind of thing, because relationships, as you know, are the foundation of like wars, big traumas. Right. And how about like, let's tell some more of those stories, which I really love. But also, have you had experiences where people have come from other galaxies? So you're dealing basically with someone who can appear to be an ET, but they've been in the same realm at times. You know what I'm saying?
I do. I do. So what I have seen in open clinic, which was fascinating to me, I have seen, I don't like the word aliens myself, but someone from another galaxy, another universe, if you will, in open clinic. And I've also seen them in, spaceships is a horrible sort of visual, but their machinery for getting here, sitting on the outskirts of open clinic. And I've stopped to read them and ask, you know, what are you doing here? And what I have seen, there is a difference in almost chemical makeup, in the biochemical makeup between the folks that are not of our Earth and the folks that are from another galaxy. And the piece that the only way I could equate it to is I couldn't detect a soul.
Oh, interesting.
Have you had that experience? It was almost like the difference between being next to a living thing versus being next to an inanimate object.
Like a robot.
There was no soul.
Well, remember the old days, they used to say if a being doesn't have a belly button, then they're an android. But actually, yes, I've seen two kinds, though. I've seen the ones that do have a soul and are on a similar kind of soul journey, and then I don't know what's an alien, what isn't really, or what's an ET, and what isn't, what's alive and what's dead. But I've seen other ones too that are cold and don't have any feeling or soul. But I don't see them a lot. This is not a thing I see a huge amount. But I'm very, very interested in, I bet you are too, in our cellular lineages and maybe how many kinds of species appear to be humans on this planet. I think that's quite an interesting thing. I have no answer for that.
I don't have an answer for that either. I do think it's fascinating. Have you ever met someone that they seem like a nice enough person, but they really just can't love someone else?
Oh, yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
That inability to actually love. And some of the beings that I saw, that was it. And when I say they didn't have a soul, it equates to they're not capable of love.
Mm-hmm. So when you work on them, you know, in open clinic, and you're bringing in source energy or God or the divine, do they awaken the capacity to love, or are they just, like you said, inanimate in that level?
They weren't there for healing. They were there to observe.
For curiosity or something. Yeah.
For curiosity. And they, in particular, were not intrigued with my divine beings.
Now that's interesting.
Like, yes, it was like they really didn't. They just didn't understand or equate to the God thing. it didn't work for them.
Well, actually, that's so just like having various people on the planet that would be like that too, right? I mean, you know,
mm-hmm.
How interesting that is. Have you, and you've only seen that two types so far? You haven't seen sort of some from Andromeda,
I've seen some other ones. I mean, there's a chapter in my book that refers to what I called the Lilac, folks from the Lilac planet. Okay. So that's in my book. But that I had gone out and I had asked for a new learning and I got one. I'm not sure in hindsight that was a great idea. But I was introduced to gentlemen from this other planet and their hue was lilac. I mean, everything about them was a lilac color. And it ended up that they wanted me to interpret their language because they had like this one older being that was the keeper of the knowledge. And there wasn't anybody that could interpret his stories and get it into writing. I could do it.
Oh, wow.
And they wanted me to do it. However, they didn't want me. They just wanted my ability. So I could tell right away that there was no caring for me. They just wanted my ability. And so I had to totally just shut off that relationship because it was not in my best interest whatsoever.
And are these lilac beings all without that kind of feeling? I mean, without that respect or?
The ones that I saw were totally without respect at all. It was just very cold, very calculated, very just trying to get their needs met, which was an interpreter, and I wasn't willing to do that. But then a couple times they tried to weasel their way back into my world, and I literally had to put up very, very strong energetic walls to keep them out.
Wow. But you're very capable of doing that. Is that something you learned before you could do your work?
I had to.
Mm-hmm. Was it hard to do that?
No, it was out of self-defense, really, because I didn't want my being to be taken over by folks from another planet. I really had to learn how to hold my space.
Wow.
And bringing in the divinity really helped with that, because really what I'm seeing is folks from other planets do not care for the divinity. So, you know, that really helps just keep my space clean and pure.
I really like that. I found there's a lot of people in your situation, for example, and I don't think you do this, but in any case, who will talk about up-and-coming earthquakes and train wrecks and this and that. And I was very clear at the beginning of my career saying, I will do this work. Yes, I'll do it. but I will not do, don't send me things that I can't do anything about. And it sounds like you have some of that as well. And I got really strict about it. And I don't get any of that information at all now. So would you say that you can call forth your market or your particular, what is it, trajectory of learning or your particular, you know, style, the style that matches the essence of your being and your soul's journey?
Would you say I can call it forward? What did you say?
I said, can you call up and describe your own market, the things that you're willing to do and the things you're not willing to do, and have spirit work with you on that and respect that?
Yes. Yes, I can. It's been intriguing. I have been shown what I think is fascinating things, such as different levels in the afterlife.
That's interesting, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is. It's fascinating. And there have been a couple times, what I was shown, Veronica, was seven different levels, the top one being for the Holy of Holies, the bottom one being truly the hell, brim, and firestone that we read about in the Bible, and sort of everything in between. And I've been taken to most of the levels. Actually, I haven't been to level one. I'm wanting to see that. And when I'm ready, I'm praying that I will. Mm-hmm. But the fifth and the sixth, very low level energy. And while I was being shown those, I set some definite boundaries. And they were respected. Yeah.
You said fifth and the sixth are low. So is one the high one? Is that what you're saying?
One is the highest.
Okay. And can you help people move from one level to another?
So some of that is the folks showing up at open clinics.
Hmm.
I have seen that. I had asked about that. And some of it, there's, I think, because I had asked specifically, can a person move up from one level to another? And I've been told yes. I'm not sure what has to happen for that to happen. I'm still learning about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's always so much to learn. It is infinity.
I know.
Right? You're talking about infinity, my friend. I would love you to talk about, and this is staying within that topic to a degree, but can you talk about abortions or babies that die?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be just abortions, but like innocent ones.
Right. And did you actually read that piece in my book?
Very much so.
Yeah. Yes. So I did have an experience where I was in open clinic and I saw that it was baby souls that I was surrounded with. And one of them was an aborted soul of somebody that I know. And that soul sort of stuck with me until I realized why I was meeting that soul. But in thousands and thousands of these baby souls, and they were all there to receive a healing. And I asked them, how did being aborted impact you on a soul level? Because I know that the experiences from one lifetime to another will stay with us in sort of a cellular memory. And we do carry some of those memories on a cellular level from lifetime to lifetime. So I asked, how did being aborted impact you, or did it? And the answer I got was fabulous. I heard very clearly, I forgot to know.
Hmm.
And I think it's just a gift of grace that these babies that have been aborted forget the experience that they had.
Hmm.
So
that's really
kind of
interesting.
Like a clean slate when they come in. It was really interesting.
But in your book, you said they're gray souls. What does the gray represent?
Passed over.
Okay.
They've already passed over. Yeah. The white ones are still in body.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. In open clinic. That's what I had seen there.
So what's interesting, when I was raised Catholic, and they said that a baby that dies without being baptized stays in limbo. I don't experience that sort of thing, but I wonder if you could talk about that. What happens to a baby that's very innocent? Can it become a wise soul and continue along its trajectory or its journey?
Absolutely. Veronica, I was raised Methodist, mm-hmm. and then Church of Christ and Presbyterian, and my faith has been an important piece of my growing up and having a moral code. It's truly been very important to me. Mm-hmm. But through this process, these last 5 years, I've really been seeing how much of religion is man-made doctrine and constructs.
Right on. Good
versus,
for you.
Versus what is God's healing, loving, pure light that's available for all of us. So I just can't buy into if a baby isn't baptized and it just hangs. I can't go there.
Mm-hmm.
So
Neither can I. But well, I guess one of the reasons I asked it was not just to be a pain, but also there's so much. You were talking about the levels of being, and I'm going, I feel like some of them, I feel even in maybe abortions, I'm not sure about this, okay? I'm not sure about anything because it's always kind of magically new, isn't it? But
I know.
But even they can have a kind of a wisdom about the journey that they're on and move through levels, I believe. Not all of them, but, you know, it's personal, isn't it?
It is. It's all personal.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, there's just so many things we don't have the answers to, and I know we're going to be learning those things, and some of it we might have to wait till we die, and then we'll forget we even had the question.
But, yeah. Well, have you worked with dying people very much?
Well, worked with Sylvia mm-hmm. when she didn't know I was working with Sylvia, but in hindsight I was. And my father right now is dying of mesothelioma, and I'm working with him.
Okay.
I have not spent time working with hospice or anything like that. What I'm a little more interested in right now is I want to work with people that have had near-death experiences.
Oh, good.
And
okay.
are sort of struggling with, gosh, what do I do with that?
Mm-hmm.
Because I have seen so much of the same things that they saw, but the only difference is I welcomed it. Mm-hmm. I sought it out. These people, it just happened to them, whether they
wanted
it
to happen
or not. So
it's sort of shocking to them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely shocking to them.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes, you know, in the old days before those were so talked about, too, like the first people, what was it, Betty Eady, I think, was one of the first ones that really made that a big story. But she mm-hmm. and many of the other ones at the very beginning of this kind of awakening said it took them like 12 years to make sense of what had happened. Are you
right.
finding that? Or are you finding it's much faster now?
I think it depends on
where they started,
people had already taken.
Of
right?
course, I guess, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What they're used to hearing about, what their comfort level was with spirit or God. If they were really against religion, then I think it's a bigger shock than somebody who's been raised. I mean, my daughters would come back and say, "Holy cow, Mom, you were right." You know, so their reaction would be very different than someone else.
Someone else who hasn't been primed a little bit, right?
Right.
Wow.
Right.
And you haven't had one, huh? But do you think that you, and I, well, anyway, I won't answer this one, but you, do you feel like on your soul level, you were trained and trained and trained to be able to evoke or awaken into this amazing work in other lifetimes? Like, have
yes.
you been an intuitive in other lifetimes? That's a simpler question.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. I have. And I think like most intuitives in other lifetimes, I was persecuted for it, mm-hmm. which made me even less willing to sign up to do it in this lifetime. But yes, I have seen a progression of healing and teaching in my lineage.
Hmm. Let's talk about lineage for a bit, because we have more than one kind, don't we? We have cellular lineage. Right, which it might mm-hmm. be like what about family groupings and soul groupings and so on? What do you about that?
I love that topic. Yeah, I love that topic. I firmly believe that before coming into a lifetime, we meet with our soul group, our soul peeps, whoever it is that we keep coming
soul
back
peeps,
into
I like
life,
that.
Soul peeps, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime.
And how many people do you think are there? How many souls?
I know personally for me of about six, but okay. I would think some person could have a whole bunch, and I don't know. I don't know that we're limited to how many there are, but I personally know of about six for me.
And do you know of them but on this lifetime, in this like real live flesh people?
Yep. Hmm. Yep, I do. Sylvia, my friend who died of stomach cancer, was one of them.
Hmm. And her husband?
Yep.
You wrote about him as
yes.
well.
Yes, Cliff. Cliff was.
And yep. what about, if this is too personal, you can shut me up, but is your husband now, is he of that soul grouping? Like, do we often marry them, you know?
I didn't.
Okay.
I don't believe mine is, but I believe his best friend is.
Now, that's interesting. So how do you understand that? How do you explain that? Not even about this particular thing. I'm not trying to pry, but why would we choose to marry one or not to marry one and still have a happy enough marriage? You know what I'm saying? What do we do with soul groupings is, I guess, my question, huh?
Right. Well, I was not an intuitive when I married my husband.
Mm-hmm.
So, but when I met his best friend and had developed my intuitive skills, it was like, now I understand, because I was probably married to him in a past life, which is why I have such an ease of conversation with him on a completely different level. It's just different. So what I do with that is just acknowledge it, appreciate it for what it is, and kind of keep it in its proper place in this lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Sort of like the fellow with the 7-year-old daughter. You just got to know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, that's interesting. Does that fellow, your husband's best friend, does he also recognize that?
He's on a more spiritual path than my husband is.
Mm-hmm.
So my husband's kind of surrounded by us. but he had said to me, the friend had said to me, it wouldn't surprise me if we'd been married before. Mm-hmm. So he is aware of it as well.
Wow. So, and what about your children? Are they also intuitive, and do they share soul family existence with you?
Yes. So they are both old souls,
mm-hmm.
and I've been with both of them in past lives. They were together. They are both adopted from China.
Interesting.
From different provinces of China.
Okay.
And they are thicker than thieves. And when they were very, very young, I realized that those two had a soul connection, and I was on the outside of it. But, you know, that their soul connection was even stronger than mine with them. I think that's maybe changed a little bit over time, but they are thick as thieves. It's really amazing to watch.
Wow.
Yeah. And
so you call
really
that soul, and we could call that soul lineage, can't we?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And are they old enough to be talking about it, or young enough to be
talking
about it?
Yep, they're 13 and 15 now.
Ah.
So we do talk about it quite freely, really.
I think it's fascinating because, like, when you have something in common with people, sometimes it can be that etheric and give you a greater bond than anyone would expect. It doesn't look that way necessarily. So what about families? Besides adopted families, what about genetic families? Do you think that we stick together and link up for generations and generations like we do on the cellular level?
Yes, I do. But I don't think that every person who's like your mother or your father had to have been mm-hmm. in your past lives. I don't think that that's necessarily the case. I think sometimes that is the case. My father now, who, as I said before, is dying of mesothelioma, he is in my life for a very distinct purpose. He is a research scientist.
Oh, my.
And, yeah, a very smart man. And he's still doing his research, and he's 87.
Oh,
so
wow.
Crazy
good for him.
Smart. Yes. And he taught me growing up that if he couldn't come up with the answer to something, he would think about it as he went to sleep. And when he woke up, a lot of times he'd have the answer.
Ah.
And I'm seeing now, and he and I can talk about it freely now, he was open to source. He was open to spirit. and getting those downloads of science, I think is fascinating.
That is fascinating. And he was capable of talking about it as well.
Right. But wow. He didn't really have the words for it then until he read my book and he and I have been talking about it.
Wow.
And I know that that's why he's my father. Because
so
I
you
do the exact same thing.
Ah, but also you've helped him embrace his own passing in a way, haven't you?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's a huge gift.
The time we have had together since he was diagnosed in February mm-hmm. has been golden.
Really?
For both of us. Totally, it's been beautiful and healing in ways I never could have imagined.
Wow. And is your mother still living?
She is. She is dealing with dementia.
Oh, I see.
At this
okay.
point, I think certainly the pressure of my dad's illness is complicating that. So my time when I'm with them is frankly connecting with him more mm-hmm. than her. And it was always the opposite when I was growing up.
Hmm. That's interesting. I knew a woman with Alzheimer's one time, and she was having awful scenarios running inside of her mind, like terrifying all the time, horrible, horrible, violent stories. And I was sitting with her and I said to Spirit, for heaven's sakes, get in there. Sure. I mean, you know, we're having so many pictures ourselves. Let's give her some there.
Right.
And I said to her, why don't you talk to your angels? And she stopped. She goes, and the Spirit of God? I said, that would do. That'd be just fine. And it shifted something. And I always tell people when they're working with dementia to think about this, because it shifted something in her and it eased her terrifying inner journey quite a bit. And mm-hmm. one time I went to see her and I said, are you still talking to your angels? And she said, that's where I get my instruction. So I tell people when they're getting awful voices, you know, surely you can, you know, induce the angels to come in at that point. So good for you that you're having a wonderful experience with your father too. And
yes.
Is he someone that you recognize from your soul's journey?
I do believe that we have been in past lives together. Yes.
And your mother, like I guess what I'm swinging around is, for example, siblings. A lot of people have family problems and sibling problems. And it seems like the bondage is very, very intense, meaning we're kind of stuck together and people are writhing quite a bit. Have you ever noticed
right.
that?
Bondage was a good word, yes.
And so what do you think about siblings? Maybe parents and siblings all go together, but I'm thinking siblings have a special kind of a role, don't they?
They do. And I have looked into getting healing for relationships that I have in particular. And I haven't so much seen the past life. I have seen the purpose of this person's life in my journey now.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, even as a healer, I'm still working on relationships that need healing in the physical.
You mean it's you don't get all the answers all the time?
No.
No, and I remember part of what your right. book is that you said some things come through just a bit and it takes a while for you to get the entire picture, right?
Right. And I think just because you're a healer and a teacher doesn't mean you're perfect either.
You're not?
Well, you might be, Veronica, but I'm certainly not.
Oh, no, I'm far. I always say I'm just at the beginning. Because it feels like that when you're moving ahead. Don't you feel like, wow, it's so infinite. I'm always just tapping the edges of it, you know?
I know. And, I know.
Yeah, your book is really exciting. So what about, for example, when we're talking about divine spirit, we talk about beings like Hitler, for example, or murderers, or someone who's done a heinous crime of some sort. How do you see people like that? Do you see them going to the lower dimensions, or do you ever see sudden, like Barabbas, sudden healings? Or, you know, is that a difficult question to ask you?
Mm-mm, no, it's a great question to ask. And when I was being shown the different levels, of course, I asked the exact same question, which was, okay, so what level is Hitler on?
Mm-hmm.
And Veronica, I got not on a level. And I said, what do you mean? Hitler's not on a level. And the answer I got was that Hitler's back in our world.
Oh, really?
Back in the physical world. And I asked, is Hitler killing people? And I got no. You know, because I asked yes, no questions, and I heard no, he's not. And I said, is Hitler going to be killing people? And he said, yes. And I said, oh, so is Hitler a child? Yes.
Oh, my.
And so I said, so is there anything I can do to stop Hitler from being Hitler?
Good, good question. Good question.
And the answer was no.
Oh, my.
So I from what I saw, Hitler's back, but a child.
Well, you know, here's something kind of hypothetically. Oh, that's very interesting. I have to think about it for a while.
I did too.
And I get cranky because there's so much murder in our world. Mm-hmm. And there's so much murder on TV or in movies. I mean, it's the big sensation. And I'm waiting for us to get that huge shift into being, what did you call it? It's like beings in the open clinic or beings in one love. I want that shift to hit the planet. But I think some days I get so frustrated because I go, well, look at our basic Christian myth. You got your Adam and Eve and you've got your sons. One kills the other. This is our basic rudimentary myth. Mm-hmm. I'm going, can we not change that myth? Do you think that myth really imposes a kind of an expectation in the deepest part of our psyche?
Well, right. I mean, it very clearly shows that life and death, even at the hands of somebody else, is ingrained in, absolutely, in everything that we are.
Yeah, that's really frustrating. And the whole thing about Hitler, I heard that other people saying that he was a healer in the sense that because he was so awful, many, many people became better. What do you think of that?
That would be great if that's accurate. I mean, it is funny because he is the litmus test. Isn't he? I mean, just that one name, and everybody knows exactly what you're talking about, and everything is judged according to that level of horribleness.
Exactly, and there's other places where there've been terrible massacres, but this one is really poignant, you know.
Right.
But I guess I'm getting a little far off field, except that it's fascinating to talk about human systems and the dimensions of our systems. And how we can interact with each other in a way that is transformative. I guess that's where my question is going. And that's where yours was going when you were asking about Hitler, right?
Right, exactly.
So what do you recommend? Go ahead. I want to hear what you say.
Don't you think it's hard living in two dimensions at the same time? There's sometimes that it's easier for me and sometimes it's really hard for me. Because my body is obviously here in this earthly dimension, and I'm, you know, a wife and a mother, and, you know, have a house and dogs and, you know, drive the kids to school and all of that business. And the other part of the time, my brain is in the clouds. I mean,
me too.
Higher self, my being is so far up in the ether that it's sometimes hard being in two places. But when you say, you know, the murder on TV and movies, I can't do it.
I
refuse to do it. I just cannot do it. My soul can't do it. My spirit can't do it. And I really just choose to have my soul and spirit in godly light, which in so many ways doesn't fit in this earthly realm.
No, it doesn't make sense to some people. It makes incredible sense to me. And also, you have a very wonderful high frequency. And when we get into, for example, auras, your aura, your whole radiance touches people around you, and they have the opportunity to move up and out of that dog-eat-dog reality, right? Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And when I work with clients one-on-one, that's purely what I'm hoping to do, to help elevate them, help them transform to seeing themselves in a higher spiritual light and really stepping into their brilliance as a soul.
Have you watched? I know you do, because when you said that, I'm watching the souls. They light up around you, don't they? the souls in people that might be your clients that might be frustrated and hurt. They light up, don't they?
Yes, they do. They connect to source. They connect to God, or, you know, their divinity, whatever that is. Yes.
Isn't that wonderful? So Open Clinic is an etheric. You get it in a visual. You said upper right. What did you say? It goes up in the upper right side of your visioning.
Yeah, it's like on the right side of me, and it's up about 3 feet.
And is it huge? I mean, can you see infinite numbers of being there?
It's huge. There's no walls. That's why it's Open Clinic. There's no boundaries. There's no walls.
And in the Open Clinic, are there layers or those levels that you spoke of the levels of consciousness on the other side? Can you perceive that as well in the Open Clinic?
No, I haven't seen that. I've seen those levels in the Cathedral of Souls, but I haven't seen it at Open Clinic. So Open Clinic is just like a one layer deep, if you will.
Okay.
If that makes any sense, but it can go on and on. I mean, I've seen hundreds and thousands of souls there. Don't ask me how I know that it's hundreds of thousands. I hear the words, hundreds of thousands.
I love that. Hey, so what's the Cathedral of Souls? Tell me about that. That sounds wonderful.
Well, the Cathedral of Souls, it's the exact same thing as the layers of, you know, of energetic residency, if you will, between lifetimes.
Oh,
so so it might look in our earthly ideas like an apartment building, mm-hmm. and like the lowest ground level is the hell, actual hell version, going up 7 stories all the way up to the top. So the Cathedral of Souls is really just like going into that apartment level of the second level. And what I have seen in the Cathedral of Souls is that there is life for souls in between lifetimes. So there's education classes, there's speakers, there's people or spirits doing activities. So like gardening or, you know, teaching kids, that kind of thing.
Are they creating contracts with one another for the next life?
That's part of it, mm-hmm. yes. And increasing their knowledge and their wisdom as well as healing from like past lifetimes. Yeah.
So they can actually improve. They can refine themselves there, eh?
Right. Right.
And what about forgiveness? And, you know, you talked about the lower levels. Is there kind of a hellish anything? And if there is a hellish anything, can people forgive their way out of it and grow out of it?
Yes, there is a hell. Really, the seventh, which is the lowest, the sixth and the fifth, those are what I would call hell.
Okay.
I don't know how you get out of those.
Okay.
I really don't know how you get out of those.
Well, I would recommend you don't spend a lot of time in there, actually.
No. I mean, the times that I was there was like, thank you for showing me that. I'd like to leave now.
Oh, wow. Have you seen the movie What Dreams May Come?
No.
It's really worth seeing. It was a real groundbreaker.
Okay.
Robin Williams is in it, and he actually goes into hell at one point. Knowing a little bit about you, I'd go, you probably will get a lot out of it. I think it was a very well-done movie about 30 years ago, I believe.
Okay.
Maybe 25. But it does depict some of what you're saying. And what else? I want to ask you a million other things. So we're talking about soul groupings. We're talking about, I guess one of the things I'm really interested in, or one of the things we can maybe wrap up with, is knowing that in many cases we have the choices to move with the soul in conjunction with source or the divine. Am I right? Is that what you're telling us?
We always have free will. As people in bodies, as souls in bodies, we always have free will. Hmm. And our ability to grow into knowing and loving spirit and grow into the soul that we were intended to be is always an option for us. And every morning that we wake up, and in every conversation, we have the ability to either kind of dig deep into the lower level energies or soar into what your soul is here on earth to become.
Well, we have to run out of time here, but can you give people a little exercise to do that they could do on a simple level that would help them remember that or use that information in their daily mundanities and so on?
So when I wake up in the morning, the very first thing that I do is I ground myself. And I think your listeners have probably heard enough people talking about grounding themselves.
Oh, yes.
So I'm not going to spend time doing that. And then what I do is I open my crown purely to God's pure white light, because frankly, that's the only light I want anymore.
Yay.
So I just open wide open my crown and just pure, and I literally just sit at God's, in God's presence. And what God looks like to me is this huge, immense healing light, almost like the sun without the heat attached, but much whiter. And I will sit at God's, I say God's feet, but that ball has no feet, right? But I sort of see it as sitting in God's feet, and I will listen to see if there's a message or a lesson that I'm supposed to learn. Sometimes it's just the downpouring of that energy into my countenance. And I can do that anywhere I am. I can do that if I'm sitting on a freeway. I can do that if I'm at the grocery store, and all I have to do is just ground myself through my feet or through my chair and open myself up to God's immense presence and healing light.
And it's very, very strong in you. I can feel it as you say that. That's a wonderful way for us to end this, except we need to know how to get hold of you as well.
Well, I do have a website, and that address is www.theministryonline.org. Or on Facebook, I am at The Ministry. And my book is One Love, Divine Healing at Open Clinic. It's available paperback and Audible on Amazon.
This is wonderful. Ruth Anderson, you are a wonderful contributor to our planet and bringing together, suturing, if you will, or flowing so many levels of consciousness, helping a lot of people. Thank you so much for being a paradigm shifter.
Oh, thank you, Veronica. My pleasure.
That's my pleasure. This is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you so much for listening to Paradigm Shifters. And you can find this podcasted on iTunes, Stitcher, and on veronicaentwistle.com. Thank you again, Ruth.
You bet.
Bye.
Take care.
Thanks a lot. Bye.